We do have a quorum, so we'll go ahead and get started. I am Andrew Potter, Clerk of the Board of Supervisors. I'll call this meeting to order. I would just like to remind all the commissioners and members of the public that are participating that this meeting is being recorded. I want to welcome all of you to the first meeting of the County of San Diego's Independent Redistricting Commission. So thank you very much to the commissioners for your willingness to serve in this important role. As I said, my name is Andrew Potter and I serve as the Clerk of the Board of Supervisors. And in accordance with California Elections Code, I am responsible for the selection process for this commission. So I've worked for the county for over 10 years and have been Clerk of the Board of Supervisors for about a year and a half. For the duration of this selection process, I will serve as secretary for the commission. And for a brief period of time this morning, I will serve as the presiding officer until a chair is selected, which is when we get to item 5 on the agenda. So before we begin, I want to introduce several members of our team. First, I want to introduce Assistant Clerk of the Board, Aaron Demarest. Aaron will be assisting me with note-taking and helping to answer some of your questions and providing training in a little bit. So thank you, Aaron. And then we also have a number of really outstanding staff that will be supporting you after the full commission is formed. So I'd like to introduce Barbara Jimenez. She's the executive lead for redistricting, and Barbara works for our Health and Human Services Agency and is the director of the Central and South Regions. We also have Liberty Donnelly. She is the deputy director with the Health and Human Services Agency and will serve as a project manager for redistricting. We also have Nicole Temple. She's a financial policy and planning officer with the county's Office of Financial Planning. She was also a lead with the county's last redistricting effort in 2011. So we're happy to have her. She is also a project manager for redistricting with Liberty. We also have Lizeth Tapia. She is an analyst with the Health and Human Services Agency, helping with research and contracts. And then finally, we have Marguerite Leone and Hillary Gibson, who will serve as this commission's legal counsel. Marguerite is a partner with the law firm Nielsen, Merksemmer, Parinello, Gross, and Leone. They specialize in voting rights, redistricting. She is the expert statewide, so we're very happy to have her and Hillary on the team. Hillary is also an associate with Nielsen, Merksemmer, so very happy to have those two on board. Anybody I missed? All right, great. So in terms of the virtual meeting protocol, it's important that you keep your microphone muted until it's your turn to speak. You may wish to use the raise hand feature in Zoom, which is located in the bottom of your screen. We would also, for the public's benefit, appreciate you keeping your camera on so they're aware that you are fully participating. Certainly, if you need to step away or take a break, feel free to do so at any time and turn off your camera. If you're having any technical difficulties, please feel free to send an email to us. We will assist. My office is also always available to provide some one-on-one training should you need that. Additionally, any members of the public that wish to provide oral testimony during today's meeting, please review the instructions that are posted on the redistricting webpage at www.sandiegocounty.gov/redistricting. And individuals that wish to speak must submit an online request to speak form. So thank you. All right, with that, we will move on to item number 2, the roll call. So I will now call the roll for the record. And before I call the roll, I would like to note for the record that all commissioners are participating via teleconference. As such, all votes will be handled by a roll call vote. So I'll ask the commissioners to unmute your microphone and say here or present as I call your name, and I'll call you alphabetically by last name, starting with Commissioner Boehm.
Here.
Commissioner Brown.
Here.
Commissioner Caterina.
Here.
Commissioner Chen.
Here.
Commissioner Diaz?
Here.
Commissioner Hansen? Commissioner Larson?
Here.
Commissioner Russ?
Here.
Great. Next on the agenda is commissioner introductions. And while hopefully you all reviewed each other's applications, we thought it might be helpful for you to spend 1 to 2 minutes to introduce yourselves. So tell us a little bit about what you do professionally and why you were interested in serving on the commission. And your introductions will also be helpful with the upcoming agenda items when it comes to selecting an interim chair and interim vice chair. So we'll go alphabetically by last name, and we'll start with Commissioner Bain.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon, everybody. As some of us mentioned, glad to see the sun out, makes it easier. And I'm sure I share your disdain for doing this virtually, but I'm glad to be together at least this way. I'm a former diplomat with the State Department, spent 30 years running around the world and sometimes in Washington. And among other things, worked with a number of countries, both in those countries and at the United Nations, on rule of law, democracy, and governance, including in some cases redistricting. I was attracted to this because, frankly, the chance to do this without large numbers of people being shot, kidnapped, or otherwise threatened was appealing. It seemed like an easier way to do it. I'm revealing some bias in advance. I hope we don't have to deal with that, but it's a remarkably important time. I am officially nonpartisan, which is my way of saying on foreign policy, I'm a diplomatic dilettante. I don't think anybody has it right, but that's what we're paid to say when we were working, and I still feel the same way now. More importantly, on domestic issues, I tend to span the gamut and look at issues by issues. It is not at all a disdain for political parties. I have all the respect in the world for them, but I have found I do best when I am working independently and able to talk to friends on both sides of the aisle, which I'm also looking forward to doing here. And I think right now I may be the only non-party affiliated commissioner, so I'm feeling lonely and I look forward to having more, but I also very much appreciate and respect all that my fellow commissioners are doing, especially in terms of supporting parties, the political process, and civics. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bain. Appreciate it. I'll move on to Commissioner Brown.
Good morning or good afternoon, rather. I'm sitting here up near Palomar Mountain, and there's a little bit of snow on the top of it. So that's kind of nice. But anyhow, I have spent my life kind of working for the state government, for the federal government. Now I'm doing something for the county. What I did for the state and the federal government was I worked as an auditor. I was a tax auditor for the state of California and retired with them after 26 years. And then I decided I didn't have enough, I guess. So I went over to the federal government and worked with DCAA, which did defense contracts auditing. So that's kind of my background. And in doing that, I've used the computer since day one with that. So I've done a lot of analytics on it, and hopefully I can bring that to the game here and have that help us. And I've just wanted to kind of volunteer for this because I thought it was a good way for me to kind of ease into retirement because I had done so much. My dad was in the military, so I was kind of born into to government service. And I just thought that was a nice little finish is to finish with the county. So, and hopefully I can bring some good points to you. We've traveled around the world too. And I've done quite a few things in different positions. I've volunteered for many positions. I have a son who going to be turning 30 here pretty soon, and he became an aerospace engineer. So I worked with him quite a bit during his lifetime, and he was in Boy Scouts, and we had church things, and I was volunteering with all of that. So here I am to volunteer with you guys, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner Brown. Commissioner Katarina.
Hi, I'm Amy Katarina. I live in Del Mar. I am a native Mainer, but I've been in California for over 30 years. Makes me feel really old. I work in biotech industry. I am a corporate communications consultant. I help companies communicate their messages to the investment community as well as to the general public. I also am a parent, and I'm a volunteer in Boy Scouts as well, like Colleen. And that's actually been one of the highlights of my recent life was working with the Scouts, especially now because we have girls in the troop. So it's kind of interesting. I have served on a number of boards. I've been involved in education foundations. I've been the past president of the Canyon Crest Education Foundation and the Del Mar Schools Education Foundation. I work a lot with the school district and the school board and have been very involved, but my kids are segueing out of school now. Congratulations to them. But that left me with a little bit of time on my hands, and I really feel strongly that redistricting is a very important function that affects our government from the bottom to the top. And it's very important to have an independent board. So I'm very happy to be here with you all and serve with you all in an independent nature and give our county the most appropriate districts that we can create. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to Commissioner Chen. Mr. Chen, you are muted.
There we go. Sorry about that. So I have a multidisciplinary background in finance, leadership and organization development, strategy, information technology, intellectual property. I've done a lot of facilitation over my time. A lot of what I did in those various disciplines was helping people come to agreement. I thought that might be helpful for this board. I actually ended up serving on as a redistricting commissioner because I got a Facebook ad, and I decided that it was probably time for me to do some public service. So I thought this might be a nice way to do it. I think that's most of what I have to say. So I look forward to working with you. I think it's an important role to do, and it looks like we've got a great group of people to do it with.
Great, thank you. Commissioner Diaz.
Hi, everyone. Nice to meet you all. And this is really exciting time. I'm Sonia Diaz. I'm from the 4th District and I'm 40 years old. This is not my first stint with public service. I actually served as my community council president for a couple years. And before that, I was actually I used to work in the state government, state legislature. I was a Senate fellow for a few years, working for State Senator Sheila Kuehl in LA, and also an assembly member, and about 4 years of state government. And then I moved on to nonprofit work. And I've been in nonprofits ever since for the past 12 years. I'm very passionate about my community, getting politically involved, especially, and being part of this process. It's a very, very important process. And what else could I say about myself? I love trail running. I'm a big fan of the outdoors. And so I love exploring all parts of the county of San Diego. I'm very familiar. I've grew up in San Diego all my life. Came here with my family back in 1991. I was 11 years old. So I'm pretty much a San Diegan. Went to school at Morris High School. Go Tigers. And I've always tried to give back to my community as much as I can. So so that's me. Nice to meet you all.
Great, thank you. I understand Commissioner Hansen has joined us. So Commissioner Hansen, if you'd like to go next, I'll just ask you to unmute and show your video. We might be having some technical difficulties. Ms. Hansen, we'll come back to you. So we'll move on to Commissioner Larson.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm happy to be here. And for the first meeting of actually the first independent redistricting commission in the county's history. So I think we got a lot to do, and I'm ready to start. Just as a snapshot, I'm a professional engineer licensed in California. I have a PhD in electrical engineering, computer science. For the last 40 years, I've been in technical and management positions in various R&D companies. I've been involved in the startup of two small high-tech companies. My wife and I are residents of Pacific Beach, and we've been here for the last 20 some years. been married for 31 years and with father and one son and a grandchild. Just as a snapshot, I've started my career here in San Diego. I attended graduate school and lived in the San Francisco area for nearly 20 years, and then lived in the Washington, D.C. area for another 20 years before being able to come back here to San Diego. For the last couple of years, I've been an independent consultant, mainly to government organizations and technology contractors. I've also been a volunteer in a lot of ways. I've worked in leadership positions and other activities in various nonprofits. I've been used to working with volunteer groups of smart, diverse, and very independent people. I think that's exactly what we need here in this redistricting commission. Just a lot of new ideas, people who aren't professional at redistricting, but are willing to learn and are able to determine what has to be done and then do it. So that's my experience. I've given a lot of public speaking and testimony, and I've certainly acted as an expert witness a couple of times. I think we have a great deal to do. I'm looking forward to working with each of you.
Great.
Andrew, can you hear me now?
We can hear you. Yes.
Oh, sure. Yay. Well, you can't see me, but I don't know why. Maybe I don't. I suppose it's my computer. The camera, but it's, I've never had this problem before. Anyway, shall I tell you a little bit about myself now?
Please do.
Okay, I am a retired high school teacher. I spent my life trying to help young people understand our government and respect it. And through what I hope was my own passion, I think I was very successful at that. I came to San Diego about 25 years ago and went to work in the nonprofit arena, also as an instructor, but then as a grant writer. And I learned a tremendous amount about the people and the issues that this this community has faced. And I've met lots of people in a variety of settings in San Diego. My husband is retired Navy, and he went to the Naval Academy and settled here when he came here as a pilot in the 70s. He unfortunately contracted diabetes, and so he had to leave the Navy and go into other work, but he never left San Diego. So that was a wonderful thing. The reason I want to do this is I'm a learner, and I can't imagine a better way to learn more about the government and the community in which I live. And I feel that I have an unusual attribute because I have spent so much time working with young people. And that's a perspective that is hard to get in an adult world. So I guess I'm still a kid at heart myself. And hopefully by the time we talk again, I'll get my camera going. And I'm really bummed because I worked hard to get my hair done today, which I haven't done in months, but oh well. Thanks, and I look forward to this.
We appreciate that. All right, last but not least, Commissioner Russ.
All right, thank you very much. I got my hair done too, Barbara. Now, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C., on the other side of the Anacostia River, where you don't want to go. But in fact, I don't know why anyone would want to go back to D.C., quite frankly. But I came out here with the Navy. I spent 8 years on active duty, driving ships, flying planes, and then did retire from reserves. And I've had my foot in both the public and private sector in the civilian world. I went to work for a company probably none of you have ever heard of here called SDG&E. I don't know if any of you heard those, you know. But I would say, I went on board there, and I started really my career in energy. So I'm also, Arvin, I'm also a PE, but I'm a mechanical engineer. But I continue to consult to the energy patch. I do some pro bono work for the city of Poway and some of their energy issues. I've served on a couple of congressional advisory committees, and some other academic commissions as well. I taught for 30 years at San Diego State as an economist, though. So I'm an engineer economist. I was always an adjunct professor. I always told my students, I have a real job. But I enjoyed teaching very much. So I taught there for 30 years in the Department of Economics. And I like marrying economics and engineering. The other thing too is in the study of economics, you have the study of demographics. I find that fascinating, quite frankly. And of course, we're going to be getting into that, into the demographic mix here in the county. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this. To Dave's point, David's point there about political party, even though I put down, I'm a registered Republican, so I can vote in their primaries, I really am an independent, quite frankly. So I just am registered that way. I was reading some opinion pieces here that we need to probably go to multi-party primaries or something like that. That may solve a lot of things, and a lot of us independents would, we kind of show up. But I'm glad to be in this august group. This is I read them several times. Was quite impressed. So I'm wondering what I'm doing here with all of you guys. But I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate all of your comments, and we'll move on to item number 4, which is the administration of the oath or affirmation for commissioners. This is required by the California Constitution, and you will all receive an oath card that looks like this. You'll get this in the mail with a self-addressed stamped envelope, so you will sign where we indicate and then return it to me. But if all of you could unmute yourselves and raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, and then state your name.
I, Jack Russell.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend,
and that I will support and defend
the Constitution of the United States,
the Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution of the State of California,
and the Constitution of the State of California,
against all enemies,
against all enemies,
foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance
to the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the
Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservations.
Or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties. Upon which I'm about to enter. All right, congratulations. It's official. Right. Okay, now we will move on to item number 5, and that's the adoption of interim bylaws and operating procedures. Before we move on to the selection of chair and vice chair, it would be appropriate for the commission to consider and adopt these interim bylaws and operating procedure. The proposed document was provided to you in advance and was posted online for the public's benefit. The bylaws and these operating procedures help to define the purpose and the authority of the commission, and the commissioner's responsibilities, the officer selection, and the conduct of meetings. These are interim, again, until the full commission is seated, at which time the commission may consider more permanent bylaws or making revisions to the interim bylaws. So I want to open it up if there are any questions. Right. Seeing no questions, at this time, I would entertain a motion to adopt the interim bylaws and operating procedure.
So move.
I'll second that.
That was Mr. Larson, seconded by Mr. Russ. All right, now we will call the roll for the vote. Commissioner Boehm, and for those, you'll just say aye, no, abstain, or any of those three options. Thank you. Mr. Boehm?
Aye.
Great. Commissioner Brown?
Aye.
Commissioner Katarina?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen?
Aye.
Commissioner Diaz?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen? Commissioner Hansen, we can, if you'd like to unmute yourself.
Sorry, I'm on the screen now, but aye.
Great, thank you. And we can see you. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Commissioner Larson?
Aye.
Commissioner Russ?
Aye.
Great. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Now we will move on to item number 6, and this is the selection of interim chair and interim vice chair. So as defined in the interim bylaws that you just adopted, the interim chairperson will convene and preside over regular and special commission meetings and will be the official spokesperson for the commission until the full commission has been selected and seated. At that point, then the full commission will select the permanent chair. The interim vice chair will act in this capacity in the absence of the interim chair. So I will preside over the selection of the interim chair and vice chair, and then we'll start with the chair first. And my thought is that we will first take nominations for interim chair and then seek a motion and a vote on the interim chair. And then we'll do the same thing with the vice chair. So at this time, is there a nomination from commissioners for an interim chair?
Well, I've looked over everybody's vita and very impressed with everybody. But I tell you, I think, David, I don't know if you'd object, but I would nominate David as the interim chair. I look at his experience. I can tell, you know, from this, you know, I think that it would serve us well.
I'll second that.
Okay. Is that a motion, Mr. Russ?
Yes, sir.
All right. And a second by Commissioner Brown. All right. For Commissioner Boehm to be interim chair. With that, I'll call the vote. Commissioner Boehm?
at risk of asking at the wrong moment, before we go to that motion and vote, we mention, see if anybody else is interested or if there are any other nominations. Okay.
All right, great, thank you. Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Katerina?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen?
Aye.
Commissioner Diaz?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Larson?
Aye.
And Commissioner Russ?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Now we'll do the same process with the vice chair. Is there a nomination from the commission for an interim vice chair?
I'll nominate John Russ.
Oh, wait, what is this? Payback? Is that what does that?
Strong second, and I wasn't going to exert payback that obviously. So thank you, Ms. Brown. I owe you.
Okay.
All right, great. All right, Commissioner Boehm.
Aye.
Commissioner Brown?
Aye.
Commissioner Katerina?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen?
Aye.
Commissioner Diaz?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Larson? Commissioner Larson?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Commissioner Russ?
Aye. Great. I'll accept.
All right, we have a chair, Commissioner Boehm as chair and a vice chair, Commissioner Russ. At this point, I would like to take just a quick 5-minute recess while I communicate with the chair on the protocol for the remainder of the meeting. So if you wouldn't mind, resume the meeting. Thank you, Chair Boehm. Welcome. So we will now move on to item number 7, and this is non-agenda public communication. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address the commission on subject matters within the commission's jurisdiction, but not an item on today's agenda. The only action that the commission may take is a referral to staff. Additionally, any members of the public that wish to provide oral testimony during today's meeting, again, review the instructions that are posted on the redistricting webpage at www.sandiegocounty.gov/redistricting. Individuals that wish to speak must submit an online request to speak form. We have one request to speak to address the commission. The speaker will have 2 minutes to address the commission, and we would ask that you please state your name for the audio record.
So our speaker, it looks like, is joined potentially both by computer and by phone. So I'm going to unmute your computer link. And then just please let us know if you'd prefer to speak by phone instead.
Are you able to hear me by a?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Then I'm going to hang up my phone. Just one moment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon. My name is Lori Schellenberger, and I'm a national redistricting consultant to Common Cause, and I'm calling today on behalf of California Common Cause. And just by way of introduction, for those who may not be familiar with the organization, Common Cause is a national and state nonprofit and a nonpartisan organization that works on voting rights, government transparency, money in politics, and redistricting reform in California and across the country. We have members in and have worked in San Diego County on government reform for many years, including leading election protection efforts and engaging in local redistricting and local campaign finance reform efforts. First, we'd really like to congratulate you on your selection to San Diego County's first ever independent redistricting commission. As you may know, the county's selection process mirrors the process used by the state in selecting its independent commission. And in 2010, and again this year, they referred to the first eight selected, as you were through the random drawing, as the lucky eight. So of course, you were also advanced to the pool of 60 based on your demonstrated qualifications and commitment to ensuring a fair, transparent, and independent redistricting process. And we want to thank you in advance for your service, as your work is going to have a tremendous impact on the lives of San Diegans for a decade. And we'd also like to give a shout out and a thank you to Clerk Potter and his staff for the work they've done to get this commission off the ground, and for their engagement with community organizations like Common Cause to recruit and assist applicants for the commission. And we'd encourage the commission to reach out to the community for partnership on outreach and engagement as you embark on this process. One of the great aspects of the independent commission process is your engagement and partnership with the community. And I know from working with past commissions, it's the aspect of redistricting that commissioners will always say they loved the most. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are other commissions you can learn from and organizations with expertise on voting rights, redistricting, and community engagement strategies. I'd really encourage you to seek their advice and lessons learned. And of course, Common Cause is available to provide information based on its experience working with independent commissions over the past couple decades. Do I have time to ask a question? I'm sorry. I do have a question and a comment on the hiring of outside counsel, which I just learned about during the introductions this afternoon. And you'll, of course, need the assistance of outside consultants, a line drawing consultant, possibly a racially polarized voting consultant, and of course, outside counsel. But I was surprised to hear outside counsel be introduced, and I'm hoping the clerk can clarify if that's an interim contract, since the hiring of outside counsel for the redistricting process should be made by the commission. And it would undermine their independence if the county's choosing their counsel for them. And just to clarify, I'm not suggesting any nefarious intent. This is a misstep that sometimes happens in the rush to get the commission set up and supported. But you'll learn this as you go through the training, that the hiring of counsel and other outside consultants is a substantive decision that could impact the outcome of the redistricting process and the public's trust in your process and your final maps. So I just urge you to proceed carefully and ensure that any contracts with outside counsel are interim until the full commission is seated and can hire its own counsel.
Thank you for your comment. Because this item is not on the agenda, the only action that is taken is it is referred to staff. Unless there's any comments from council, but thank you, Ms. Schellenberger. We appreciate your comments. All right, we'll proceed on to item number 8. And this is titled Overview of the Brown Act. I'm sorry, Mr. Boehm, I am taking over your role. I'm going to turn it back to you.
It's perfectly fine. Thank you for that. We do indeed now proceed to item 8, Overview of the Brown Act. We turn it over now to the Assistant Clerk of the Board, Ms. Demarest, who can provide us with this training. Thank you.
Thank you. And can everyone see the screen?
I can.
Okay, great. So today I'm here to talk briefly with you about the Ralph M. Brown Act, which is a state law that this commission will follow. It's usually referred to as just the Brown Act or the Open Meeting Law. I'll provide some of the basic information that you'll need to get started. And then once the full commission has been seated, you'll receive a more detailed training on this law. So the purpose of the Brown Act is to ensure transparency in decision-making by local legislative bodies, including this commission. The Brown Act requires all meetings to be open to the public so they can see or hear the deliberations and discussions of decision-makers. The public must be able to participate and provide input in that process. The Brown Act also ensures the public has access to all the same documents that decision-makers have when making their decisions. So since the Brown Act is called the Open Meeting Law, what exactly is a meeting? Generally, a meeting is a congregation of a majority of members at the same time and place to hear, discuss, or deliberate on something within their jurisdiction. The Brown Act requires posting the notice of a regular meeting and the agenda for that meeting at least 72 hours before the meeting. The agenda must provide a brief description of each item to be discussed or acted upon. The agenda also must specify the meeting's time and location and be posted in a publicly accessible place and on the organization's website. The Brown Act also provides that members of the public can comment on specific agenda items. The public can also comment on general topics of the commission during non-agenda public comment, which you just heard. The commission can set reasonable time limits on public comment. However, they cannot stop the public from speaking just because they're saying something that may be critical of the commission. And because people cannot come to a physical location to speak at our meetings due to the pandemic, the public must be allowed to observe or hear the meeting remotely. And the commission must allow public comment either by telephone or otherwise electronically, which we're doing today through the Zoom meeting. Previously said that a meeting is a congregation of a majority of members. For the Independent Redistricting Commission, we currently have 8 members. That means that a majority is 5 out of the 8 members that are required for a quorum to be able to meet and take any action. 5 out of the 8 members will be the majority from now until the full commission is selected and seated. The Brown Act prohibits indirect communication, including serial meetings. A serial meeting occurs when a majority of members use a series of communications of any kind, either directly or through other people or via technology, to discuss, deliberate, or take action outside of a notice public meeting. We're going to talk about this in a little bit more detail because this is the most common way that a violation of the Brown Act can occur. So we want to make sure everyone understands this concept of serial meetings and serial communications and why those are prohibited. So examples of types of communications that are used for serial meetings could be emails, text messages, phone calls, in-person conversations, and social media. Please do not send an email to the entire commission about any topic of action within its jurisdiction, because that would be a violation of the Brown Act. The reason is that you would all be discussing something through email and potentially forming a collective opinion on a topic outside of a public meeting. In addition, please do not send reply all emails to the commission. For example, a member of the community might email all members on a topic, and one member replies to all on the email string to state a position on that topic. Then all the other commissioners know that member's position on an issue before the general public does. Another example is a chain communication. So to illustrate this, I'll use your names alphabetically. We're not singling anyone out, just for demonstration purposes. But let's say that member A, Amy, might contact member B, Barbara, and discuss an item on the agenda. That conversation is fine, but if Barbara then contacts Chris, and Chris contacts David, and David contacts Jack, then suddenly the majority of all of the members have discussed their position on an issue outside of a public meeting. A second version of what we just of that is what we call the hub and spoke, which is where one member, A, Arvid, contacts Colleen, then Arv may also contact Chris and David, and then maybe Chris contacts Sonia, and suddenly 5 of the commissioners have all been involved in a discussion outside the public meeting. So finally, please avoid posting your opinion on a topic within the commission's jurisdiction on social media or commenting on other commissioners' social media posts about redistricting. It even includes emojis. So please, no thumbs up, no thumbs down, no smiley faces, no other emojis on other commissioners' posts. So finally, the general rule is that no action or discussion may be taken on any item that's not posted on the agenda. An action means a vote, which is pretty straightforward, but an action also includes a collective decision or a collective agreement by a majority of members. So these actions will start with some type of discussion, maybe like the serial communications we've just talked about. It really means that a majority of members should not take any action or discuss any item within its jurisdiction unless it's during a publicly noticed meeting and the topic is on the posted meeting agenda. To ensure that the commission stays true to the goals of the Brown Act and the redistricting statutes, we encourage the commission to please limit or avoid discussing anything related to redistricting with other commissioners outside of our noticed public meetings. So that concludes our Brown Act overview. Does anyone have any questions about that? Anyone? I know some of you are pretty familiar with this and have served on other Brown Act notice boards and commissions.
I do have a question. How do we handle emails from the public? I think you mentioned that, Aaron, but I need to hear it again.
If you receive an email individually from the public, please forward it to the redistricting email, and then we will distribute it to the entire group for you. But please, if you get an email from a member of the public and it's got all of your, you know, it's sent to all eight of you, please don't hit reply all and say, oh, I think that's great, or I agree with that person, because then suddenly you all know a position on an issue that the rest of the public doesn't know because it happened outside the public meeting.
But there's no requirement for us to personally respond to that that individual.
Okay. Aaron, as far as the county is concerned, is there a restriction on a reply, both pro forma and substantive, which I'm asking for just the reason you may be telling it?
Would our legal counsel like to chime in on that?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, indeed.
We can. Thanks, Hillary.
There's not, so if you were to reply individually, for example, that wouldn't necessarily be a Brown Act violation. But best practices, like Aaron said, is just to go ahead, forward the email on to staff and keep everything moving through official channels. It's just going to be best and the easiest way to avoid a potential issue, to avoid communications outside of the public arena.
So just to be polite, can we respond saying, thank you for your email, I'm forwarding it to the commission or something like that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
For what it's worth, I'll frame this as a comment for advice. I've seen it work both that way, Mr. Chen, which I think would be fine. I've also seen it where we forward it and the staff responds to confirm receipt. I think it's okay to go either way, but as far as my own opinion is, it's best to have one practice so you don't have some commissioners responding individually and others sending to the clerk. I don't think we need to worry about that just today, but is that the understanding for the staff on the line?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we may want to take that up in our next meeting. Which brings me to a separate question. In terms of setting agendas and sending agendas out in advance, that is something the staff can certainly email to all, but in terms of setting up a draft agenda, am I guessing right that you would share that perhaps with at least me and Mr. Russ in advance before we circulate it?
Yes, that is the intent, is that we would work with the chair and vice chair on the formulation of the agenda. And then once it's finalized, we would send it out to all the commissioners and post it online.
Which brings me to the truly touchy issue of minority communications, because while I understand best practices are, we just shouldn't talk among ourselves. I have found it useful in some experiences with a local Board of Education and parent advisory group here, to be able to at least communicate with, in this case, say the vice chair or the leader of a subcommittee, so that the agenda is set right, with the understanding that that's really only for the process and that there would be a chance for public comment and actually a vote on the agenda before it's formally adopted. Am I right in assuming, for example, that you all would send a draft agenda, Mr. Russ and I could discuss it without any Brown Act violation as a minority of the commission, we could contact one other member of the commission if we so needed to, quote unquote, again, for process reasons, but then gave you a agreement in principle that that would be the draft agenda for consideration at the next meeting. Is that the way the process would work with agendas?
That sounds appropriate. I'll defer to council to see if there's any concerns about that process. Marguerite or Hillary, do you have any concerns about that?
You know, Andrew, Hillary didn't jump on. I don't have a concern with that under the Brown Act. It's it meets the qualifications. I do want to take a quick look at the ex parte provisions of the bylaws. And I was just trying to pull them up to see if they applied also to commissioner communications. But our chairperson could easily solve that by simply saying, I talked with the vice chair on the contents of the agenda. So I'm from a Brown Act perspective, I'm fine with that.
Great, thank you.
Other questions, because this is a great time and opportunity with nothing, with only a few other things on the agenda to spend some time and really understand that. Although again, I understand most, if not all of us have had some experience with this before, but please feel free.
Oh, I'm sorry to jump in. I was just to clarify, you will receive a full training on the Brown Act with even more details once the full commission is seated, and we'll get into more about email communications, ex parte communications, all those different things. But we just wanted to kind of give you a basic overview today to make sure that everyone really understands, in particular, that serial meeting concept, because that is generally where commissioners will run into trouble. So we'd like to make sure everyone understands that concept.
Thank you, Aaron. Well done.
Any other questions? Very good. Andrew, do we have any requests from the public to speak on this item?
We do not, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Very well. Then I'll ask one more time. Seeing no request for comment or hands up or anything like that, we will move on to agenda item 9, method to select 6 additional commissioners. I'll return the lead to Mr. Potter to provide us an overview of our responsibilities for selecting the 6 additional commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in accordance with the Elections Code, specifically Section 21550G, your role now is to select 6 additional commissioners from the pool of the 51 remaining most qualified applicants. As we described in the staff report, the Elections Code requires the commission to select the 6 additional commissioners based on the following criteria: relevant experience, analytical skills, ability to be impartial, ensure that the commission reflects the county's diversity, which includes racial, ethnic, geographic, and gender diversity. However, it does specify that formulas or specific ratios are applied. Then the 8 commissioners shall also consider political party preferences, selecting applicants so that the political party preference of the members of the commission is as proportional as possible to the total number of voters who were registered with each political party in the county or who declined to state or do not indicate a party preference, as determined by registration at the most recent statewide election, which was back in March 2020. Based on the criteria that I just described, we have provided some statistics in the staff report on the current makeup of the commission to help narrow your selections. So first, to ensure the commission is proportional to the percentage of registered voters, it is recommended that the commission focus on selecting 3 Democrats and 3 no party preference applicants. Additionally, you'll see other demographics such as district allocations, race, ethnicity, and gender. We've also provided a table that is sorted by political parties, then last name of the pool of 51 most qualified applicants. This table also includes the applicant's city and zip code to assist with the geographic diversity requirements. It is recommended that after today's meeting, you all identify your top 6 candidates from the remaining pool that meet the criteria that I just described. And the commissioners should then email the names of their top six candidates to me by noon on Monday, November 16th. So that's a week from today. And then I will compile the results and summarize the selections for the commission's consideration at the next meeting. And we'll certainly share the total number of nominations for each applicant. At the next meeting, the intent is that with this information, if there's a consensus on applicants, then the commission can appoint those individuals. If not, then we'll use your selections to help narrow down the field of applicants and continue with another round of selections until we formulate the six additional commissioners. I do want to note for the record that we received letters from the Latino Community Foundation, the South Bay Forum, a letter from multiple community organizations. And then we also received some correspondence that came through just as the meeting was getting started that we will forward to all the commissioners and post online as well that relate to this item. With that, I am happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Yeah, Andrew, the memorandum that you put out with the stats was very, very helpful.
Great.
The one thing I didn't see, I don't think I saw it because there's a lot of things to review. But in that you did not state the percentage of Black African Americans in the county or Hispanic Latino, or you did not give that proportion. Do you have those data?
We certainly do. And under the statute council, feel free to chime in, but under the statute, it does say that specific formulas or ratios shall not be applied. Now, certainly want you to be aware of that information. So I'm happy to show a slide here that shows that information.
Now that would be helpful, I think.
Yep.
Okay, good. Are you gonna send this to us or should
yes,
I just-
I'll send that to the commission and also post that online for the public.
All right, you'll send that to us. Okay, great. Now, I understand, we don't need a cookie cutter, formula algorithm or something, but this is kind of helpful for us to, see what the makeup of the county is.
Any other questions?
Andrew, I was wondering if there are other factors that we might want to look at, including membership on other commissions or boards, including service on public bodies, including anything that was affected by the recent election. Is there anything like that we need to be, or we might want to consider?
Certainly that is under the umbrella of relevant experience, but I would ask you to rely on the information that was provided in the applications as you're reviewing them so that there is consistent information
right.
And consistency in that review.
Yeah. At some point in particular, I wonder if it might be helpful to have something on whether any of the candidates we're looking at are either under consideration for or members of any other redistricting commissions.
Yes, I think that's a great comment. And I will note for the commission's benefit that Lydia Dostal, who is one of the 51 remaining most qualified candidates, was selected to serve on the City of Chula Vista Redistricting Commission. Now, the other entities that are formulating redistricting commissions include the City of Escondido and the City of San Diego. The City of San Diego has formed its commission and none of the individuals on the 51 most qualified are on that commission. We did have one applicant who was appointed, but he withdrew his name, so his name is not on the list that we've prepared for you. The City of Escondido hasn't posted their list of members yet, so we're gonna check with their city clerk on where they are at with that process.
Terrific, thank you for that.
I had a question, Andrew, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
So this is in general talking about the location part of the commission. Mm-hmm. So when we look at the Lucky Eight, as you said, we see that there's one in District 1, District 2, District 3, and District 4 and 5 each have 3 and 2. So if we need to pick 6, should we be considering having a more balanced approach and having a minimum of 2 candidates per district? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And, you know, as I indicated, that that is part of the elections code that requires that the commission reflect the county's geographic diversity. And so that would be a good place to start in terms of the districts. It is a bit like a puzzle, and it's one that I will acknowledge in selecting the top 60 as I was looking at them that you were all part of, to make sure that you're balancing all these things. So as you start to narrow down your choices, you then have to go back and make sure, okay, is this person, are they reflecting the diversity, the geographic, the gender diversity, the political party, all of that. So the things, you know, do get moved around as you start focusing, narrowing down your selections.
Yeah, I looked at the data that you supplied, that spreadsheet at the very end. Mm-hmm. And I took probably the easiest or the least number in this demographic, and that was Black, and that there were actually four Black African Americans. Well, I noticed on your pie chart there that about 5% of the county is African American, 5% of the 14 commissioners is 0.7. It's going to be hard to get 7/10 of a person. I know that, but of course you can round and things like that. So it almost tells me, and again, I'm not trying to apply a formula or an algorithm to it, that it's got to be one of these four. Mm-hmm. You know, one of these four is going to be one of the lucky, is going to join the lucky eight here. And then, of course, of the Blacks, two are female and two are males. Mm-hmm. And of course, my assumption is that the 60 that the staff chose, really, we all are, as you say, you know, we're qualified. What are we qualified? We're citizens. We, you know, we meet these requirements. Just because somebody has, you know, whatever, that doesn't mean that they're better qualified than someone else. So in that regard, I think we can take your first cut as being an honest evaluation. I know as I read through some of the others, I didn't read all 51, believe me, I didn't. I did read all seven of ours, you know, me being the eighth. But that may be something to look at. And I don't know how the other commissioners feel, but for example, you say, okay, 5% of the commission, that means one commissioner should come from this pool of four. Mm-hmm. And the question is, who's the best qualified? And then the question is too, and all right, now you got male female issues. Something to consider as you consider is what it is. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I think you are on the right track. And you know, looking at the current demographics of all of you that are on the commission, it would be my recommendation to focus on race and ethnicity that includes the Black African American applicants, the Hispanic Latino applicants, and the Asian applicants to help, you know, round out the diversity of the commission.
Andrew, if I could interject, if it would not be an interruption at this point.
Please do.
Yes, I do want to point out that the state law requires a balance, and that race and geographic diversity be among your considerations, and they are among the important considerations. But it is also mandatory on the commissioners to consider the other qualifications as well, and that the diversity of the group is part of its integrity and part of its claim to confidence, but there needs to be a broad approach. Actually, looking at the law, the strictest qualification is partisanship. It's supposed to be as close as possible. So I appreciate and commend you on your focus on diversity. I urge you to keep your focus broad and look at the other criteria that you're supposed to consider as well.
Could I ask a question about the issue that was raised earlier about being on another redistricting commission?
Mm-hmm.
Does that eliminate the person whose name was mentioned at firm consideration for this board, could they be both on the Chula Vista and the countywide board, or is that reason to eliminate them?
They, my understanding is there is no conflict for them serving on the City of Chula Vista's redistricting commission. I think the issue comes down to their availability. Certainly we're gonna be on the same track in terms of the timeline for adoption of the maps. And so that might be a challenge, but there is not a conflict. And Marguerite or Hillary, feel free to chime in if you have more to add on that.
Marguerite in particular, if you can make sure to address the question of whether there is, and again, speaking from personal experience, if there is some sort of public objection to a member who is slated on both commissions, what happens and what choices they face?
Okay, well, let me confirm what Andrew has told you. There's no conflict with a person on the Chula Vista Commission and on the County Commission. I will say this and get information to you through Andrew, but I believe the cities, unless Chula Vista is a charter, are on a different schedule. They do not need to complete their redistricting as quickly as you do. So that's another consideration. And then would you kind of reframe your question, Chairman Boehm, so I can kind of focus my comments on it a little better?
Sure. I'll say it because it's a matter of public record from a public meeting. I was also under consideration for the Chula Vista Commission. And when I asked and wanted to make sure for the sake of transparency, and Barbara, I think with all your experiences, will be understandable, but I say it for everyone. I was told there was no legal challenge or problem with it, that it was, as Andrew said, a question of time and ability to serve. However, it did come up that if a member of the public was to challenge or raise a question, and there was some decision made that there was some conflict of interest. Now we're getting to hypotheticals here, but there, if there was some hypothetical challenge where the candidate's eligibility or suitability for the position came into question as, quote, a redistricting commissioner, that person might be required to leave the first commission they were selected for. So in the case of the one person we're talking about, the legal requirement, as I understood it, and I apologize if I'm misremembering anything, would be that they'd have to leave the Chula Vista Commission. Now, that's also up to them, theoretically, that if they're so selected, they could resign from whichever one they wanted and stay with the one they wanted to stay with. It's a very long way of saying that I don't know if there's a legal requirement from Marguerite, from your perspective, what happens if there's some public challenge to it. But my understanding was that it's the first commission that they joined that they would have to leave unless there was some resignation involved.
Well, there, it's pretty hypothetical, but I'm gonna do my best here. There is a doctrine called incompatibility of offices. I think this probably doesn't fall within the doctrine, but you also have an obligation to consider the ability of the next six to be impartial. Public testimony is crucial to what you're doing at every single step. And the process that's being proposed at this time will allow the public to comment on individual selections or identification of applicants who might well round out the commission. I think that public comment has to be credited and listened to, and it may be decisive insofar as it would influence the view of the fortunate eight or the lucky eight on the ability of a particular commissioner because of perhaps city allegiances or
other religions is to be impartial. And so I do believe it's a consideration. I do not believe there is an incompatibility of office here because Chula Vista has no influence over the county commission. The county commission has no influence over Chula Vista. And once again, I will confirm for you whether or not Chula Vista is on a different track from the county, which may make this less important. I hope I've answered that, Chairman Boehming, maybe more information than you need.
It was more of a theoretical that I brought up. And Barbara, again, as with your experience, I'm sure you've had plenty of moments where you ask a short question and all of a sudden your audience gets long answers going.
I'm glad I asked, but thank you.
For what it's worth, though, and I offer this just in the same frame I think Mr. Russ offered his, I would keep in mind two things, and I say this from experience both abroad and in San Diego and in Chula Vista. Number one, people are always better than what they look like on paper. I thought all of you were already outstanding, but I can already tell you, just listening to the introductions, I think we're going to do fine. And I think in terms of the lucky eight and the lucky six, and soon it will be the whole, all lucky 14. The other thing though I'd ask along the same lines is, while there's no specific formula to apply, I think all of you have been through these situations, both in a lot of cross-disciplinary ways, as Mr. Chen and Mr. Russ were saying, as I think everybody had. I think the power of diversity is really at looking at that whole mix. It's a jigsaw puzzle, it is a Rubik's Cube, but it's looking at all those combinations. And what I would just suggest is, when you put your list of six together, take a look at it as a group and see, okay, how does that look and how does it look fitted with the eight? And not just in terms of the numbers, in terms of the skills and experience and how outreach is going to work, all that. I feel guilty saying it because I don't think it necessarily needs to be said. But when I look at those letters and when I hear the public comments we had earlier, I'm thinking there's a lot to draw on here and we can find the right combination. It's not necessarily the best, it's the right fit for all the different qualities and talents we want to bring together. Sorry to ramble.
And Chairman Bain, we do have two requests to speak on this item, so if it's appropriate at this time.
I just want to make sure that none of the other commissioners have anything to say first. Going once, going twice, very good. And I appreciate the patience of the members of the public.
All right, great. As I said, we have two requests to speak on this item, so we will each individual will have 3 minutes to address the commission. And again, we'd ask that you please state your name for the audio record. We have a request from Janine Ericat and Lori Schellenberger. So we'll begin with Janine.
So Janine, it looks like you're joining us both by phone and via the Zoom meeting. So I'm going to unmute you on the Zoom meeting first, and if that doesn't work, we'll switch to the phone.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Thank you all so much. So first I wanted to say good afternoon and congratulations to all of you. And thank you, commissioners, for volunteering your time to be in service of the first ever San Diego County Independent Redistricting Commission. My name is Janine Ericat, and I'm with PANA, the Partnership for Advancement of New Americans, a nonpartisan organization that represents Arab, Middle Eastern, Muslim, South Asian, African refugees, and immigrants throughout San Diego County. If you had a chance to read through the letter I sent earlier, you can see that we have a lot of partner organizations excited about this process, and we envision and strive for a representative democracy that reflects the rich ethnic, racial, economic, and political diversity of San Diego. We understand that your selection was a result of a random drawing, and selecting the next six commissioners is critical. As you may know, San Diego is a majority minority county that is less than 50% non-Hispanic white, which as has come up is not currently represented on the commission. Additionally, when looking at statistics, I ask that you look at it with a nuance because often census data does not reflect the richness of the ethnic, political, and economic diversity in our county. And since you have the decision-making power on the remaining commissioners, we ask that you are mindful of all of the above mentioned. If you're struggling with the lack of representation in the applicant pool, which we know is a predominantly white applicant pool, then we ask that you look at people's ability to appreciate diversity and their experiences with diverse communities and regions. Additionally, this is your process. You decide the next steps. And if you feel that there's not enough information on the applicants, you know, just as Commissioner Baum mentioned, you know, people are different in person than they are on paper. Then we ask and encourage that you ask for a supplemental essay or you hold a public interview just to help with the selection of the people that you're going to work with in the next year. And as you all know, the responsibilities with being part of the redistricting commission. And so to stay in time, in line with time, I just wanted to thank you all again and congratulations. And I look forward to working with you for the upcoming year. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Now move on to Lori Schellenberger.
Yes, hi, it's Lori Schellenberger again. I promise I won't call in on every agenda item in the future, but maybe just half.
Happy to have you.
So, I should also mention that while I consult at a national level on voting rights and redistricting, I'm also a resident of San Diego County and I live here and work from here. So I have an interest in this from that perspective as well. You're faced with a nearly identical challenge that the State Commission's Lucky Eight faced earlier this year, if you followed that process, and that is rectifying the lack of diversity and representation that resulted from the random drawing by which you were seated on the commission. And through no fault of your own, your current composition appears to be 75% white, which means that in a county that's minority white, there are racial and ethnic communities not represented among you. And we joined the letter that was submitted today by a variety of stakeholders and as we've outlined there, the lack of racial and ethnic diversity on the commission in a county that is a majority minority would obviously be unacceptable. And, you know, it's not just unfair to the communities that are not represented, but it would be unfair to you as you undertake the tremendous responsibility of getting to know the county and drawing district boundaries that ensure fair and equitable representation for all who live here. I'm sure you agree. And fortunately, the law was designed to account for the very situation you've been placed in. And not only gives you full discretion to select the final six, but requires you to ensure that it represents the region's rich racial and ethnic diversity. And I note that this, you asked about census data and Clerk Potter shared that. And I just note there's census data in that letter that was submitted today. And really also that there are racial and ethnic groups that are not represented in the census data, but who make up the fabric of the county. Of course, there are other considerations, as Commissioner Caterina already noted, and you'll be layering those requirements onto each other, such as political party affiliation, geographic diversity, and gender balance. And I'd note there is one non-binary applicant in the pool, and that's an important consideration as well. But I'd also note you aren't starting at zero. You have geographic diversity, and you have some political party diversity already. You do have ground that needs to be gained in the racial ethnic diversity category if you're to comply with the statute and ensure the diversity it requires. And it's complicated, and we know you'll take this very, you know, this responsibility incredibly seriously. And if necessary, I'd echo what my colleague said, which is that if you need supplemental information about the remaining applicants, that you consider requesting that and or doing public interviews to get to know them better, because you'll be serving together for a long time. And so you want to put as much thought into this decision as possible. Thank you again for volunteering to serve on the commission. Best of luck as you get started, and we look forward to working with you during this process.
Thank you. And Chairman Boehm, that concludes public comment on this item.
Very good. For the sake of inclusion, I just want to make sure one more time that there are no outstanding questions, that everyone has a sense of their responsibilities, starting with the agreement that we'll email our list of six to Mr. Potter by 12 noon next Monday, the 16th. Is that acceptable to everyone? Great. Excellent. I'm seeing nodding for the sake of audio recording. So that will be our standard for it. And we'll undoubtedly have good discussions at our next meeting, which brings us to the conclusion of today's meeting. Right now, the next meeting, as I think, I hope all of you saw, is scheduled for Friday, November 20th at 2 p.m. I wanted to just make absolutely sure everyone's available for that time, or if there's any issue with that. Good. I will request that in the process of getting the emails through with the nominations, if you have a question or a request for interviews or anything supplemental like that, my suggestion at this point, subject to you all agreeing, would be include that request in your email next Monday. And as we put the agenda together for the meeting, which will need to be posted on Tuesday, correct?
That's correct.
Right. We can put on the agenda whether we'll try to either do any supplemental interviews during our meeting, or maybe even convene another time where, because it won't be a decision-making event, we can still have a meeting or at least a discussion where the interview could be conducted with either majority or of the commissioners available before the meeting. Either we can work through that with your permission. Mr. Russ, Mr. Potter, and I will have a good discussion about that, I'm sure. But that's only if you see a need for those interviews. I do tend to agree. There's a lot of good information in the packets we already have. So hopefully that will do. But I also want to encourage anyone to make that request or request in any other way any additional information on the county's makeup or demographics. Mr. Larson.
Now, how would the Brown Act apply to an interview with the candidates?
It would have to be during your notice public meeting. So it would be just like this.
Okay.
So one way to do it would be we'll add it as an agenda item, and we should would at least tentatively, I think, reach out to any candidate, schedule it in so they're available, and then subject to approval of the agenda, we could conduct an interview for whatever amount of time might be required. Just because I've seen this in a couple of other local commission functions here, I think it's the kind of thing where we would try to keep it to roughly 1 to 2 minutes of comment. It's not something where I think we're going to be going into a dissertation challenge or something like that. It hopefully could be very specific and very focused, but it's a very good point. It is something that requires some kind of Brown Act cover, even though it's collecting information. Ms. Hansen?
Wouldn't it be necessary to open that opportunity to all candidates if you open it to one or two?
In all likelihood, I think so. And I think even if the Brown Act doesn't require it, that's probably a best practice. That's just my opinion, again, and I defer to Mr. Potter and legal counsel on it, but I think certainly from a best practice point of view, it's probably a good idea to think about it in that way. And I think the way we could do it, unless Andrew Hillary or Marguerite, do you want to say something first?
I was just going to add on one suggestion might be to wait until the next meeting until we have the nominations from all of you, and then that will help narrow down the field that you might consider interviewing at a subsequent meeting.
And if I may, Andrew, I agree with that. There are some commission laws and statutes that mandate interviews. This one, interestingly, does not. And it does require you to review the remaining names. And I'm certain you're going to do much more than that. I would second Mr. Potter's suggestion that you get through your initial run through first. There's a wealth of information. I've been reviewing it myself, and it's humbling the qualifications that are in our general public. And it may be that having gone through that process and had your discussions at your next meeting, interviews, you may feel that interviews are not necessary, or at least the pool of interviewees will be significantly narrowed.
I do want to respect everyone's time, and I know we're running a little longer than planned, but this is important to get right. I will say what I'm sure will put Andrew and others into a panic, but if we need another meeting after that meeting, I certainly would be willing to consider that. And I think the rest of us would, I think everyone would feel we'll do this in a way that will get it right. And if we have to, if we don't go quite as fast as we might otherwise, that's fine. We're going to get it right first. But again, and Margaret, I think you made exactly the right point. We're talking in a little bit of a vacuum. Once we look at it all, hopefully it'll be relatively easy to go through things. And I think people took the application process seriously. So sorry to extend the discussion. Any more questions on that?
I'll add on that we are here to support the commission. So however many meetings that you all feel are necessary, we will support that. The only issue is the statutory deadline to form the commission by December 31st.
So we're okay for Friday the 20th for the meeting. We are okay before that for submitting your top six candidates on Monday, November 16th at noon. And I would strongly encourage, please have as many in mind, as many different factors in mind in that period between submitting the top six and the email, so and the meeting itself on the Friday, so that we can have a good solid discussion and have the kind of exchange that we've had today. With that, I'm about to adjourn the meeting unless there are other comments, questions, or concerns. Very good. So we are adjourned by my clock at 3:29, and we will see you all again on Friday the 20th at 2 p.m., preceded by the email on Monday the 16th at noon. Great to meet you all again. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That was a good choice for you guys to pick you two. See you.